Perhaps you are here in church because you are wondering what a life of faith might be like, or what a restoration of faith might be like, whether it would make a difference for you. Maybe this is not an academic question, but one which has driven you here because there is something that you need, that you think might be here. Well, I want to tell you an old story. It's 2,600 years old, but it is a true story. Some stories are important enough to be remembered so many years later. When this story begins, it had already been many decades since Jerusalem had been conquered, destroyed. It had been many decades since Jerusalem was conquered by an ancient and mighty empire named Babylon. Since Babylon, the devastator, had come, they tore down the walls of the city of God. Mercilessly, they dragged people away from their homes in captivity. They hoped to break the spirits of the people. So children, women and men alike, were taken from their homes and made to live in the heart of the empire that had conquered them, in the hopes that they would lose hope of ever returning home. Babylon forced the people to leave the promised land and to live instead as exiles, dependent upon those who had conquered them. And the very last sight they saw of home was the temple of God being torn down piece by piece. This was not how things were supposed to have gone. This was the promised land. This was the city of God. This was God's own house lying in pieces. This was not how things were supposed to end up. It had been decades since that terrible day. Decades since Jerusalem had been destroyed and the people of Israel were languishing in captivity. And it would have been easy for them simply to give up, to start believing that there simply was no moral order to the world, that it was simply the case that might makes right and anything else is just wishful thinking. It would have been easy. But the people of Israel had faith in God. And for them, faith looked like demanding of God that God be something more. Demanding help from God. Demanding that God not be some nexus of myth and morality, some explanatory device. Rather, faith was raw. Faith was in need. Faith was honest. Faith sounded like Psalm 137. Psalm 137, which was written in those years, which reads, "Babylon, you devastator, happy shall they be who pay you back what you've done to us. Happy shall they be who take your little ones and dash them against the rocks." Faith demanded that God take action in the world, that God show up and bring deliverance. And out of nowhere, and quite at an unexpected time, God did show up. Deliverance did come. Deliverance was not what they were expecting, but it did come. Deliverance looked like a foreign king from the far north, a man whose lineage was non-existent, a man named Cyrus, an upstart from an obscure part of the world, from a place called Persia that no one had ever heard of before. Cyrus, he gathered armies like a hurricane gathers wind over open water. So swift, so unexpected was Cyrus' rise to power that people believed that he must must have been sent from God. So mighty and unstoppable were his armies that it seemed that it must have been God who made this possible before anyone would have expected it. Cyrus and his armies were at the gates of Babylon, an ancient and mighty empire, brought low by an upstart, by a nobody named Cyrus. He was a godsend. Now the people, they had faith that God would take action, that God would do something. And it seemed that God had done so. The people prayed that someone would give Babylon a taste of their own medicine. And here he was, Cyrus, with armies at the gate. But Cyrus did not fulfill the people's prayer for vengeance. He did not give them what they thought they needed. Rather, Cyrus did something far more wonderful and inexplicable. Cyrus did not choose to take up the reins of empire from Babylon. Cyrus did not choose to take up the reins of devastation from Babylon, but instead, he set out to right the wrongs of the past, things that he had nothing to do with. Cyrus declared to the people of Israel that he personally would right the wrong that had been done to them. He declared they would return to Jerusalem, return and rebuild their city, reclaim their homeland. What's more, they were to rebuild the temple to God. What's more, Cyrus declared that his own treasury would pay for the cost. This is a true story. Cyrus did not worship the God of Israel. Cyrus had never been to their lands. He owed no debt to their people. And yet he restored to them their homeland, a gift which gained Cyrus nothing to give, and which yet meant the world to the people. This is a true story. You can go to Jerusalem, you can go to the Western Wall, you can go into the tunnels, to the old foundations, and you can touch with your hands what Cyrus built. Thus says the Lord to God's anointed, to Cyrus, I have grasped your right hand to subdue nations before you, to strip emperors of their robes, so that you may know that it is I, the Lord, the God of Israel, who calls you by your name. For the sake of my servant Jacob and Israel, my chosen, I call you by your name. I have named you Cyrus, though you do not know me. Cyrus, God's anointed, or closer to how the translation would be from Hebrew, God's Messiah. Perhaps you are here in church because you are wondering what a life of faith is like, whether there is anything in a life of faith for you. Perhaps this is not an academic question for you, but rather one in which you come because you need something. We'll learn this from the story of Cyrus and the people of Israel. Faith refuses to believe that God will be silent in the face of human suffering. A life of faith demands that God take action. A life of faith demands that God be more than something dead and still and silent like a statue, but demands that God be a living God. Faith demands that God takes action. And yet, a life of faith in God also will mean being surprised and confounded by what God chooses to do, because it will not be what we expect. It probably won't even be something we think that we want, but it will be something far more wonderful than that. Faith will be like the people of Israel praying for God to rain down vengeance upon Babylon, and instead to find God brings them home to rebuild what was lost, to be restored by someone they would never expect, a deliverer named Cyrus from the land of Persia, who comes like skies raining down righteousness, or like the earth in winter opening up to give blooms in the snow. Perhaps you are wondering what a life of faith is like, not out of curiosity, but out of need. If you come out of need, then know that that is no shame. That is no false faith, to stand in need of God. This is the root of faith. Perhaps you know what it feels like to live in exile, far from home, as Israel did. Perhaps you know what it feels like to look back upon what feels like long years stretching into decades of suffering with no end in sight. Perhaps your life has not turned out as it was supposed to. Perhaps it is hard to watch the wicked thrive while you play by the rules and get further behind. Perhaps you feel like you are living the same day over and over and over, and you just need something, anything to change, and the ideas of what might change are beginning to scare you. Perhaps, though it might be impolite to say in church, perhaps you feel it is true that God really needs to get in gear. Perhaps you are in church today not because you believe that God is real, but because you are looking for some reason to believe that God is real. Now, if this sounds even a bit like you, then it may come as a surprise, but you are a person of faith. Now, this may not seem like it's true, but don't take my word for it. Take it from the prophet Isaiah, or take it from the author of the Psalms. You are a person of faith if what you are looking for from God is that God will be involved in the world, that God will be involved in your life. You are a person of faith if you refuse to believe in or bow down to a God who is as dead and uncaring and ineffective as a statue. If you are looking for a living God, then that is the root of a life of faith. Learn that from the people of Israel. But learn this too. God does not behave as we choose. God does not act through the people whom we would expect. The people of Israel learned that when a God-anointed foreigner named Cyrus denied them vengeance and gave them instead restoration of home. What God will do in the world is not what we expect, nor will it even be what we think we want. It will be far more strange and wonderful than that. That is how you will know that it has come from God, that it is not what you were looking for at all, but instead something that you would never even dare to ask for. God's deliverance might look like a short, hairy pushy, wide-shouldered stock trader who lives on a sailboat, but who knows the one thing that you need, who wants to teach you the one thing you need, which is how to stay sober on the worst day of your life. Or, after the medicines have all been tried, and the clinical trials are over, and you are lying on the bed you will die on, God's deliverance might sound like a flood of words you never knew you needed to hear from your children. Or God's deliverance might look like a simple, rough-hewn manger with a wool blanket in a stable in the middle of nowhere in the mightiest empire in the world, where a child who would be destined to change everything was crying for milk. If you are wondering about a life of faith, know that the world needs people to live lives of faith. But more than that, the world needs God, the living God, the God of Cyrus, who will give us deliverance, not as we expect it, but deliverance far more wonderful than we would ever dare ask. May it be so.